what would you say if I said that I could bring them back?
I guess I'd say I never thought of that.
Well, alright, hold tight, you might wanna stand back, because one small dawn is coming intact.
St. John forward, spitting out some more words, fully intact, jacked, ready to rap and attack. Small John on your lawn, living like a gnome, hit you with my lyrics like a bullet to your dome.
Tonight when he comes up here, he's either gonna kill or he's gonna suck. But there's no in between for Mr. John Forward.
Welcome to St. John Forward Radio. I'm the titular John Forward. I do this show every Monday night from 9 till 10 o'clock on local 107.3 if you're here in St. John, New Brunswick. But if you're not, don't worry. You can find me on Facebook or YouTube, John Forward Comedy. That's where the video is streaming. Anyway, and audio is available afterwards at johnforward.podbean.com. So lots to cover, this week. So I'm going to try to keep each topic fairly concise. It's been about a month since I've done a normal show. I did a show on Easter Monday, and I found out 2 days later that I had caught American COVID. I was sick for a couple of days. I had not quite a fever. I think I hit 37 degrees Celsius at the top. I had a bit of a cough and kind of some chest congestion. I only felt bad for about 2 days. The cough lingered a little bit longer than that, I went down to Portland, Maine to catch a show over the Easter weekend, went down on Sunday, came back on Monday. The sickness hit me on Wednesday. And also Wednesday afternoon, I got a scary email from the government. I assume it's an automated thing because you have to sign up for that ArriveCan app to cross the border, which I need to delete that thing. I should not leave that on my... Anyway, that's not a on-air thing that I need to handle now. But yeah, I definitely should have deleted that app off my phone immediately. Got a scary email that I assume goes to everybody who crosses the border, that the long and short of it is if you even have symptoms within 14 days of coming back into Canada from the United States, you need to self-isolate for 10 days, even if your local rules are less than that. So here in New Brunswick, the isolation rules for full-on COVID are 5 days. I feel like I was through it by the end of 5 days. I'm going to be honest, I'm not 100% sure about asymptomatic spread. I've heard both sides of that, and I'm not sure which one I buy. Seems like you're not contagious if you don't have symptoms. That's kind of how viruses tend to work. The symptoms that it makes are ways to kind of short circuit your body into spreading the thing. I don't know though. I am not a doctor. But anyway, so 10 days, even because I think I tested negative on Wednesday for COVID, but I still had the cough. So even with just the cough, I would have had to isolate for 10 days, even if your local rules are less than that. And failure to comply could lead to a $5,000 fine. So had to behave myself. Yeah, I didn't want a $5,000 fine. I'm not sure how enforced that is or how they would even find out. But anyway, I was a good boy. I isolated. I thought that I was through, because my dear wife May had COVID a couple of weeks earlier than that, and I did not catch it from her in the same house. So I thought that I was safe. Figured I must have already had COVID and just didn't have symptoms or something, but The old America strain got me. But anyway, so I could have done the show from home on that first Monday, but I had already worked all day. My day job from the same room that I would have been podcasting from, and I just did not want to spend an extra hour in the room, and I didn't have a whole lot to say. So no show that week, and then last week I had Maxime Bernier, leader of the PPC, on the show. I'm going to talk a bit more about that. It's getting a little bit out of date, I was going to, if we've got time tonight, I'm going to follow the science. There was a study that came out, I think April 25th, about how the filthy unvaccinated are murdering all the vaccinated with their poor choices. So we're going to follow the science on that if there's time. And the big topic du jour is that another country is thinking about maybe changing their abortion laws. So that's, straight white man, not supposed to throw my two cents in on abortion, but men can get pregnant, and I'm not a biologist, so who's to say if I even am really a man? So anyway, I think I'm allowed to talk about it. We'll touch on that in a little bit later, but to start with, follow up on the Maxime Bernier interview. It was kind of an interesting thing. It's not really something that I sought out. It's not something I thought that I would be doing with this show ever. I'm glad I did it, and it was, I've got some regrets for just certain things that I'll discuss, but I knew that Maxime Bernier was going to be coming through. Nick Pereira, who's the local PPC candidate, was on the show a couple of times, and he mentioned that Maxime was coming through in May. Nick and I had floated the idea while we still had the vaccine passports of doing some sort of top secret comedy show where we would not check papers. Ended up not coming together in time, so now the filthy unvaccinated, you're welcome to come see comedy shows now. Speaking of which, tomorrow, May 10th, I'm going to be doing a set at the Uptown Pub Down Under, so you can check that out. And then this weekend, No Jokes Barred returns to McGill's on Saturday night, showtime 7:30. That's McGill's at the St. John Boardwalk. Lots of fun comedians on there. I knew Maxime was coming through, and I had kind of thought about reaching out to Nick to see if maybe we could set something up, because, you know, I'm no PPC shill, but, he's a person that I would like to have a conversation with. But I figured, oh, Maxime Bernier, he's got better things to do than to come on my little old campus radio show / podcast. So I didn't ask. Turns out he did not have anything better to do. Nick sent me some text messages on the Friday before, asking if I'd be interested in having him on, and I of course jumped at the opportunity. So we set that up. It still felt odd to me that I was going to have. I mean, it's a small party, but you know, still the candidate for prime minister. Not many of those have graced my microphones over the years, so that was interesting. So anyway, but still, part of me was like, is this happening? No, is he gonna want to sit here for a whole hour? Like, I've seen him. One of my favorite people on the internet is Michael Malice, and I think during the election, he had him on, but that's an hour show, and he only gave him like a half hour, and that was over Zoom. I got the full hour in person. So anyway, but still, like Monday afternoon, I texted Nick, are we still on? Yep, everything's a go. I went down to the rally that they had in King Square. Not terribly well attended, if I'm being honest. There was a decent crowd there, but I'm going to take a swing in the dark and say if Justin Trudeau or Jagmeet Singh or Elizabeth May, is she still the leader of the Green Party? I don't know. I think she might have stepped down. I feel like those people would have drawn more of a crowd. So, but anyway, Nick and him gave some speeches. I stuck around. I did not want to get any PPC clothing or hold up a sign. Again, I'm not shy that I did vote for the PPC, but I'm not telling anybody else what to do. If you like what they have to say, or if, like me, you think they're the least bad option, then fill your boots. But so after the rally, he was kind of, or no, it was before, he was kind of shaking hands and taking pictures. So I went up and I shook Maxime's hand. I said, I'm John Forward. I'll be talking to you a little bit more later tonight on the radio. And he looked at me like, what? I don't know about this. And he asked like one of his handler guys, am I doing something on the radio tonight? And he's like, what time? I'm like, 9 o'clock. And he's like, I don't know. And the handler guy got out his phone and he's swiping through stuff. He's like, I don't see it on the agenda. So I'm like, okay. And I kind of slinked away. Went and I found Nick and was like, hey, they said that this wasn't on the books. Are we, what's happening? And he was like, yeah, it's on the books. You know, he's very busy. He doesn't necessarily know what's on his schedule. And I'm in my head, I'm like, yeah, but his guy didn't know about it either. So I stayed for the rally, listened to the speeches, and Nick was busy with his people. But Sarah, his wife, I talked to her for a minute after, and she assured me that everything's been sorted out and we're good to go. And I was like, all right then, I guess we're going at 9. I had a backup plan for what I was going to talk about, and I kind of arrived and we're ticking off, like we're getting to, it's closer and closer to showtime and no word. I'm like, yeah, he's not coming. So I was, you know, I'm either expecting somebody to be like a couple of minutes early or very late. It kind of threw me through a loop that they kind of arrived at like 9:02. So I had just kind of started the intro to the show, so I'm kind of introducing the show while Nick's out in the hallway and Maxime's settling in. So I was kind of expecting to talk for a couple of minutes and then play a song. I was going to play The Waiting Is the Hardest Part by Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, the live version, so it was not a hit here on local FM. And kind of make a joke that I had got blown off by Maxime Bernier, but no, he arrived. I think this is on air. I think I had mentioned I wasn't sure if he was coming, and he was like, no, I told you I was coming, and I'm a man of my word. And I'm thinking, well, he didn't really confirm. But anyway, he arrived. My dad asked me this question, so in case you were wondering, no, I did not get any instruction about what I should or should not ask him. He showed up and I asked him what I wanted to, and he answered my questions. So, you know, I put a little bit of pre-work into the interview because I wanted to ask interesting questions. So I figure most people know what his position is on the COVID policies and vaccinations and everything. Everybody kind of knows what their position is on the trucker convoy. I don't think it's any different than anything that I've said on the show. Immigration is also kind of a big topic that I don't know enough about, and it's not a huge priority for me, so that wasn't something I was very interested in talking about. He managed to bring it up anyway, surprisingly. I saw that he had a little bit more of a financial background than I was aware of when I was doing my research before the show. So I kind of wanted to ask him about the economy and inflation. I think we briefly touched on housing. I'm not sure if I brought that up or if he did, but you know, those are topics of the day that they don't usually talk about. And I also enjoyed trash talking the Conservative Party, because I mean, from my point of view, the Conservative Party was always the bad guys. The last time I had voted in the federal election before I voted in the most recent one was for Jack Layton and the NDP. I was more of a bleeding heart in my youth, but still, the Conservative Party, yuck. When they were doing the debates for a new leader, when Andrew Scheer was given the boot because he had lost an election, I watched the debates thinking, well, maybe I'll try this politics thing. I'm an anarchist. I don't like the idea of voting, but let's give this thing a try. But I watched the debates and I didn't like any of the candidates. Leslyn Davis or Lewis, one of those is a movie. She was the least bad option. She has a reputation as a social conservative, which I don't know exactly what that means in her case, but that's a red flag. But yeah, yuck. The PPC party, as I've said on the show, seemed to be the least bad option. They were the only ones against all the COVID craziness and were very adamantly free speech. All of the other parties were either quiet or against. Anyway, that's two more things than I agreed with than anybody else. But when the trucker convoy was happening and you started seeing these conservative politicians all of a sudden start piping up and giving some pretty good speeches that I saw on Twitter, calling out Trudeau, you know, I enjoyed all of that stuff. But I think when the Ukraine thing blew up, I see the Conservative Party kind of rattling their sabers and pounding on the war drum. And I'm like, oh yeah, there we go. There's the Conservative Party I know and loathe. I did some research into to Maxime's background with the Conservative Party. I knew that he was sort of involved. I didn't know at quite what level. I didn't know that he was just narrowly beat for the leadership of the party by Andrew Scheer. I'd read kind of some stuff about him splitting off and starting his own party, and I appreciated that. And I really do, as much as I think it's a net positive that the Conservatives all of a sudden started pretending to care about freedom, a little bit too little too late, but at least somebody who's got some power, minimal, but you know, certainly more of a presence than the PPC. At least the conversation is being moved in that direction, and I think that's the biggest value that the PPC has. I mean, I have no opinion on who should be in charge. If I could vote none of the above, then I would do that. But I think having at least a couple of PPCs in there to kind of force the conversation and potentially kind of widen the span of topics that we talk about in Canadian politics, I think that's where their value lies. And if the Conservative Party is stealing their thunder, at least somebody's talking about thunder. So, but anyway, I don't think I'm ever going to vote for the Conservative Party. Still, we'll see what happens between now and then. I'll either not vote at all or probably for the PPC again, but we'll see. Again, I'm not shilling for the party. I'm not telling anybody else what to do. What else? I do have some regrets about the interview. First off, I would have preferred it to be more conversational than like interviewee. I think that's more interesting, and that's kind of what I would want to hear. But for the most part, I kind of asked my questions and I mostly shut up and just let him answer. I feel like I did a better job, maybe not the first time, but when Nick Pereira came in, I did not want to just wind him up and let him give a speech. I wanted to have a conversation. I wanted to get a sense of him as a person. Now, Nick Pereira as a person, I've talked to him for several hours now. I like the guy as a person. Whether or not I would choose him to be my leader, that's a whole other question. But he doesn't seem to be the monster that he's made out to be. And I suspect Maxime is also not the monster that he's made out to be. But given the format of the conversation that we have, I don't feel like I got to know the man. I got to know the politician and his positions on various things. So, if I get a chance to do it again, now that, and part of me, there's a certain level of trust required if you're just going to have that kind of an interview. And, we didn't really have any rapport. I assume Nick probably put in a good word for me because, I want to bring these people in to have an interesting conversation. I don't feel like it's my job necessarily to grill them or to like hit them with gotcha questions or anything like that. There is certainly, that's an important thing that should be happening in the media. I don't think I'm necessarily the person to do it. If given the opportunity, I would love to do that, but a prominent political figure, this applies more to Maxime than Nick, wants to come in and do my little show, I want them to have enjoyed the experience. So I think we had a good conversation. Now, since he knows now that I'm not immediately going to do a CBC hit piece and I wasn't out to get him and misrepresent his ideas and that stuff, maybe if he comes back through again and he wants to come on the show, then maybe we can be a bit more relaxed and have more of a conversation. So, the door is open now. I haven't gone back and listened to them, but I assume my second interview with Nick Pereira was probably a bit more conversational because we had more of a rapport at that point. When I did Nick's podcast, what is it? Dinner Guest, Sex, God, and Politics or something like that. That was a fun conversation, and that was his show, so I could just answer, and I could be a little bit more funny. That's another thing. I'm a comedian. I enjoy talking about politics, and comedy is not like my top priority on this show necessarily. If you want comedy, you can listen to Four Story Walk Up with myself and Brian Godso and Arif Hussein. We've got I think we're planning on going live on Wednesday night, so you can check that out. I threw in a couple of tiny jokes here and there, but I'm not really sure how to be funny with a political figure, especially one that doesn't know who I am. So anyway, that's something that, maybe I dropped the ball a little bit. I'm a comedian, I'm interviewing a guy. There's lots of material there, but he didn't know what he was coming into, and I wanted to be respectful to a certain point. Another thing, again, I haven't gone back to listen to the episode, but just my memory of being there in the moment, I feel like I inserted my own opinions probably more than you should, particularly if it's that kind of an interview format, and we're not just having a conversation, there's really no need for me to throw in my two cents as to, this is what I believe, what do you think? He doesn't care what I think, or well, maybe he does, but I don't know. That's not a great interview tactic, and, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. This is the first time, lesson learned. Maybe I'll get better at this if I've got more people on. So that, me tossing in my own opinions, that's probably not a great way to conduct an interview. Finally, just a kind of a mechanical, is that the right word? I am aware that the microphones were in our faces on camera. This room is not really set up for cameras. Like, when it's just me, I can put my webcam right on top of the computer monitor, and this isn't in the way. When I've got two people in here, which I've only done a handful of times since COVID, there's not really a good place to put a camera. Because when we're in here, I don't know how much of a sense of the layout of the room that you have, but Maxime was sitting directly across from me, so there's no good way to have one camera that shows both people's faces, unless the room was much wider that way. If we could put the camera way over there and get kind of a profile view of both of us, that would probably be okay. I've attempted putting it up high over here on this side. That wasn't too bad. I tried this last one was the first time I attempted a two camera setup, which I had my usual webcam behind me pointed at Maxime, and I had my cell phone on a tripod like here pointed at me. So both cameras were in a bad place, because like right here the microphone was in my face from that. I probably could have put my phone up here on where the webcam usually goes. Maxime's camera, because of the way the microphone bar was set up, I did have it on this side pointed that way, and I noticed that the microphone was in his face. I kind of awkwardly tried to, you know, move it behind me so it was coming in this way, but the further it goes this way, then like my microphone bar, probably should have had him in the other seat over there and filmed kind of this diagonal. Anyway, lesson learned. It ain't pretty, but I think it went pretty well. And yes, I am aware that he tweeted out a picture of himself in front of the City Market and Fort Howe, I think. And he had said that he was in Halifax, which is a bit of a blunder, and it is funny, but it's so many people sent that to me, so many people. First off, just because I have somebody on my show doesn't mean that I'm their number one top best friend / fan. I don't care that he screwed up the name on Twitter, and it's an easy mistake to make. Again, there should be some sort of screening process. I don't even know if he's the one that tweeted it out directly. For all we know, somebody on his campaign tweeted it for him, which is still a blunder. It was corrected, but so many people sent me that screenshot either via direct message or in the comments below the pictures that I took or on the podcast. It is funny, but it's not the damning blow that some people are making it out to be. If he had said St. John's instead of St. John, even his hardest core PPC supporters here in St. John, New Brunswick, probably would have called for his execution. But he called us Halifax. Oops. Not that big of a deal. I don't care. Again, funny thing. I got some juice out of it. I made a post that was kind of poking fun at it. That's fine. So anyway, I'm going to remind you that you are listening to Local 107.3 FM here on Local 107.3 FM. You might be listening on YouTube or Facebook. That still counts. I'm happy that I did it. Again, along with this is how I operate. I immediately assume that everybody's out to get me. I thought that I had tweeted it out and was kind of disappointed that that Maxime didn't retweet me, because I'd seen that he had retweeted some other stuff that he did. And part of me was like, oh, well, I guess he didn't like my hard-hitting questions. And then I went to look at my own Twitter feed and saw the tweet that I thought that I had sent out with the YouTube link was not there. I think when I tweeted it out, I had like the YouTube link and the picture and like a little description. I think that's too many different medias for Twitter to handle. And I don't remember. It was either like on the computer or on my phone, and it let me think that I sent it out, but just didn't post. Whereas when I went to go tweet it again via the other option, whichever of the two, you can't put a link to a YouTube video and a picture on the same tweet. So anyway, I eventually had the proper tweet out and tagged Maxime in it, and he liked it. He retweeted it. He followed me. He reposted and retweeted himself several more times since then. So he must have been happy with it. He must have been getting some decent feedback. Most of the comments on YouTube, which I'm told you're not supposed to look at the comments, but I so very rarely get them. So I do look at them so far. But, you know, once somebody starts hurting my feelings, then I might have to disengage from that. But lots of views. I think that's the highest view count by a long shot on my YouTube channel. Some of the numbers on there are pretty embarrassing. I tell myself that that doesn't capture the whole thing. Even if 9 people listen to my show on YouTube, how many countless more on Facebook or live on the radio? I can tell myself all of these lies, but anyway. Pretty good numbers on the YouTube. I haven't gone into the weeds of the analytics to see how long people tuned in for, but I'd say it was a successful show. And if you're listening now because of that, hello there. I hope you weren't hoping for a gushing diatribe on how impressed I was. His answers were decent. He didn't tell me anything kind of shocking or revelatory. The economic stuff was pretty surface level, which in the minimal, I don't think that's a reflection of his knowledge, but just, you don't want to get too into the weeds in a limited time interview, although, you know, an hour, maybe that's something we could take a deeper dive into. He, of course, inserted immigration into the conversation. I didn't really want to talk about that, but it came up. I'm not going to change the subject. That's one, I don't know. I think it's weird to me that, in 2022, immigration seems to be such a high priority for him and the rest of the party. I don't think that necessarily means that anybody that has that position is racist. There are arguments for reduced immigration that aren't just I hate all of those people. I did push back on this a little bit. The current, and again, I don't know the details of this enough to have a strong opinion on it one way or another. Currently, he's saying that we're taking in 400,000-450,000 a year, and that's too much. Back in the Stephen Harper days, it was like 100,000 to 150,000, and that's what he's not pushing for. No immigration. He wants to reduce it down to that. And as I asked him, I don't know how you decide where that line is of what's the perfect amount of immigrants. No matter who you are, there's probably a number that is too many, and there's probably a number that is not enough. And I don't know where that line is. According to him, things were better when it was only Stephen Harper numbers. Now things are bad. I don't know. It seems logical that we have a housing crisis, so limited places for people to live, therefore bringing in more people seems like that could be a problem, regardless of where they're coming from. If too many people are being born, it's also a problem. So there's that. Where I guess my biggest disagreement, which I didn't really push back much on this in the episode, I don't think it would have. Maybe that's a conversation for another time. I'm not big on this. They need to learn the language and they need to have Canadian values stuff. I mean, I get why somebody might want that. And surely there are other places in the world that have values that I find abhorrent that I don't necessarily want brought here. But I don't consider myself much of a patriot. Watching the trucker convoy, and you know, that was about my peak level of patriotism. I'm not invested in this whole idea of the Canadian identity, and this is where I'm losing all the PPC viewers that have come over. I don't think that there needs to be a Canadian identity, and whatever that means, which is, it's pretty nebulous. I don't even know what it means exactly. If it's so good, then other people should want to be a part of it. And if they don't, then I don't know. And, you know, maybe that means, okay, well, then you're not allowed to come over. I mean, one way to look at it is I wouldn't invite somebody in my house that had drastically terrible values that don't align with mine, somebody that I couldn't have a conversation with because they don't speak my language. I get it. Doesn't mean I hate that person. I'd also want to look at the relative, like I'm a small government or zero government really person. So government spending means government power. So I would like to know more about how many immigrants come into Canada and start up their own business and are kind of self-sustaining. I've got zero problem with anybody that does that. I've got zero problem with any organization that wants to fundraise in however way to sponsor people and buy them a place to live and help integrate them into it. I mean, if that's all voluntary, I'm 100% on board. And again, like I said, if somebody can just come here and open up a business, a restaurant or whatever, anything, then I'm 100% on board with that. The PPC line seems to be that there's a lot of people coming in that are basically going on welfare. And I don't know how true that is. I'm sure there's got to be some. So how many of our immigrants are a net drain on, you know, the wealth of our country? That's something worth discussing, and I don't know enough about it, so I'm not going to. Anyway, let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about abortion. It's always a crowd pleaser. So anyway, let's take a quick break and we'll change tactics a little bit here on St. John Forward Radio. What song are we going to play? What does the Spotify shuffle tell us? Start with the Corners, Rosalie Cunningham, here on St. John Forward Radio. We'll be back in a couple minutes. Thank you.
Wait, hold on a second. Back on St. John Forward Radio. Let's get the music paused and all that stuff. So, we're back. And again, another thing I want to touch on. Again, I've received almost all positive feedback on the episode. Most of the people that I know that don't necessarily like Maxime Bernier are still like, oh, good for you. That's a pretty big guest tree to have, and that's cool. If you are a person who's concerned about platforming bad people, I disagree. I think it's good to have conversations with as many different kinds of people as possible. And, unless you think that my politics are, worse or more dangerous than Maxime Bernier, there's an argument for that. I think you should think, like, if you like me, but you don't like Maxime Bernier, I think you should be happy that some of his people are going to be exposed to me. Maybe I can steer them in a better direction. Maybe you're worried that I'm steering them in an even worse direction, but I'm promising you now, I will not rest until I've radicalized every PPC voter into becoming an anarchist. That's my goal in life. Probably not going to be very successful, but anyway. Whatever the case may be, I think it's good for those people to hear a sympathetic but different point of view on many of the topics that they find important. The Roe v. Wade leak happened in the U.S. I think that came out like the day after the interview, so we never got to talk about that. I was thinking, I don't know if that would have derailed the whole thing or what. Hold on a second. I took a screenshot. I would have thought, and this is just, I don't know, that he's like the lead guy of the far right of Canada. He posted on Facebook what his opinions are on abortion, and it's not the take I was expecting. He says, you can look this up for yourself if you want, but I'm going to read it to you. I'm being asked my reaction to news from south of the border regarding Roe v. Wade. As a rule, I won't comment on court decisions in other countries unless they affect Canada. This being said, if you want to know the PPC position on abortion, we don't have any official policy, but let our candidates and eventual MPs follow their conscience and advocate and vote as they wish on this issue. Contrary to other parties, PPC will not be afraid to have this debate if a bill is tabled. I also said publicly a few years ago that I personally would support bills banning sex-selective and late-term abortion. Polls show majority of Canadians agree with this reasonable position, despite what hysterical opponents are saying. As far as a conservative take on abortion, that seems very reasonable to me. And again, the thing about not having a party policy and letting the individual members vote as they wish, I think is a good thing as far as politics go. I suspect that may change if he ever had any real power, but who knows? So my position, now, since you asked, I was on board with my body, my choice before COVID. I was on board with my body, my choice during COVID and around vaccines, and I'm still my body, my choice as my default position. And I think that everybody on both sides who are only throwing out that phrase for the one thing but don't mean it for the other, you're all hypocrites, and I don't like you. I think it is a very similar argument. I think that a woman should decide what they get to do with their own body. I feel like everybody should get to decide whether or not they take a vaccine. Neither of those things affect me directly because I can't get pregnant, and I got vaccinated, the first two shots anyway. I'm checking out on the booster for now. But I think people should be able to make their own decisions. And again, when the vaccine stuff first started coming out, I saw a lot of left-leaning progressive people. First off, like all of the like mandate and vaccine protests and stuff, they started with, oh, this will be good. My body, my choice. What do you think now, blue hair? I don't know how genuine that is, and I feel like part of it was kind of, yeah, my body, my choice, what about now? And it was very smug. So anybody that's staunchly pro-life who was throwing out that phrase to kind of own the libs during the vaccine stuff, I think that's kind of gross. I also think it's gross, the left-leaning people that accuse the right... I mean, it's silly that any of the COVID stuff has become a right-wing issue, but the reality is that it kind of is. All of the left-leaning people throwing shade like, oh, my body, my choice now. Where were you when we were talking about abortion whenever? Also, I don't like the owning of the other side and the shit talking. I don't think it's helpful. I'm tempted. After the last couple of years that we have, where what I'm going to, in broad strokes, call left-wing policies have been terrible and have infringed on a lot of people, and part of me, as soon as there's one, for the first time in a long time, that there's been one decision, or, well, it's not even, it hasn't even been made yet, a leaked decision that might be made. This is the first time in a long time where the right wing kind of won. So I understand that, you know, but the impulse to be like, ha, in your face after all the stuff that you put us through these last couple of years, I understand it, but I don't think it's helpful, and I think that we should try to avoid it. Both sides, whenever a new thing comes up, I wish when the vaccine thing came out and people started to protest against the mandates and the passports and all that stuff, I wish the pro-choice people would have been like, you're right, now you understand, my body, my choice. We're kind of on the same team. Now you understand what we were saying before, and try to find some common ground. That didn't happen. And now that it's gone the other way, where we're going from my body, my choice for vaccines into, well, now abortion rights are in jeopardy in the U.S. Now it's all the conservatives like, hey, that should also be, okay, lefties, I know you weren't with us for my body, my choice for the vaccines, but I've seen the light, and I might not agree with you, but at least, you know, I understand your position. I wish there was more of that, and it's not happening. Everybody's just using it to fight with each other, and I don't think anything good comes from it. So, given that I am pro-choice, the level of priority for me is where I diverge from a lot of people. Again, this isn't my go-to issue. It's important, but to me, this is just one more bullet point on a long list of unnecessary control that the government has over individual people. Now, is not being able to get an abortion better or worse than getting fired for not having a vaccine? Debatable. And again, it's going to depend on your own personal values and morality. But I think it's all in the same ballpark, and you don't necessarily have to have the same position on both things, but you should probably be sympathetic to people that are making the same point for these different things. Whereas I see this as, there's a difference, and you can Google this. I'm not going to have time to get too far into it, but I don't believe in positive rights. I do believe in negative rights. What that means is I don't believe that people have a right to force somebody else to work to give them something. That's basically enslaving the other person who's making it happen. So, but a negative right is basically the right not to be messed with. The right not to be, I have a right to not be murdered. I have a right to be maybe not discriminated against. I mean, the discrimination is a whole other thing, but in this conversation, you have a right not to be stopped from going into a certain place. You have a right to not lose your job because of your sexual orientation or your gender, or your political views, that kind of stuff. I believe in rights to not be messed with by some outside force. And this is the government saying, well, it's not even. First off, getting rid of Roe v. Wade is not a ban on abortions. It means this is no longer up to the federal government to mandate. Then they're going to leave it to the states. There are many states that are probably going to kick in anti-abortion laws. Some of them have, like, locked and loaded. I think it's called trigger laws or something. Like, the moment that Roe v. Wade is turned down, they've got automatic, this is the new abortion law. And some of them are going to be horrific. But, you know, the blue states are largely probably not going to change. Anyway, even though I am pro-choice, I am sympathetic to the pro-life argument. I mean, baby murder might be hyperbolic, but there's a point to be made. And, you know, if you're pro-choice, I don't know where to draw that line. Like Maxim said, most people on both sides are probably against late-term abortions. I don't know exactly where in the pregnancy it's considered late-term, but I mean, really, where do you draw, like, conception? I don't necessarily agree on, like, that as a spot where life begins. That might be too early, but, like, birth might be too late. But I feel like anywhere that you set that line in between is arbitrary. The argument that it's just a clump of cells, again, as a pro-life person, that is straight-up propaganda. It's not true. It looks like a little baby very early on. From what I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, send me some resources. But, like, a heartbeat, I mean, I don't know why the heart is, like, the significant thing. I mean, that's just a thing that pumps blood. That's left over from, like, Bible days when they thought that, like, your emotions came from your heart. Maybe brain function? I don't know. That might be a good metric. I don't know. And it's not my business to say. I just think that if we're having an argument of the rights of the for sure human mother versus the maybe person fetus, I'm going to err towards the mother. But I'm sympathetic to the people that don't want the babies to be murdered, and I don't think they should have to participate in that on any level. Same as I don't particularly feel good about having to foot the medical bills for a smoker who gets lung cancer. But if we're funding healthcare, I think this falls under that category. I don't think even most pro-life people are, like, hardcore against the exceptions for, like, the usual scary scenarios that are brought up, like rape and incest and all that stuff, health of the mother. Very few people are, like, hardcore no abortion anytime for any circumstances. And I don't think that's a huge amount of the abortions that happen. From what I can tell, the vast majority of abortions that happen are basically just, I don't want to have a baby. To me, legally, that's good enough. Morally, I might judge you a little bit. I mean, for me, I don't want to have kids. If I happen to knock up my dear wife, May, it's ultimately going to be her decision. I'll support it, whatever she wants to, but I'd probably lean towards not murdering the baby and raise it. It's going to create a lot of fights in the relationship, and that's a lot of responsibility I don't want. But, you know, if I happen to stray from my relationship and knock up a side piece, I'd be gunning for abortion 10 times out of 10. But again, somebody else does that same thing, I might give you some side eye, but the lucky thing is I'm not trying to impose my opinion on what anybody else is doing, so it doesn't matter. Anyway, that's my thoughts on abortion that everybody wants to know. But anyway, this particular thing is going to lead to some bad outcomes probably in some states, but you know, on the whole, I think state rules are better than federal rules. In a democracy, you've got more control over who your governor is than who the president is. So most things, more decentralization is good. I've also heard people on both the pro-life and the pro-choice side say that the original legal argument for Roe v. Wade was not strong, and that's why they want to take it down. They use some sort of privacy thing in the... Anyway, it's all... The timing of the leak also, same time as a big Pfizer data dump, and, you know, midterm elections are coming up. I'm sure that's a factor. But anyway, we're running out of time. This has been St. John Forward Radio. Thank you for tuning in. Like, share, subscribe, all that stuff. Good night. Thank you.